The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network. Discover a new relationship and approach to life through the space between. Join spiritual teacher Brittany Mondito for A Moment of Silence, a weekend workshop May 24th to 26th at Omega Institute's beautiful campus in Rhinebeck, New York. Everything we're searching for lies behind what we're running from, Brittany says. Reconnect with your inner sense of safety, grounding, and centeredness. Learn more today at eomega.org/thrive.
Hello and welcome to my podcast. I'm Dr. Stephen Farmer, psychotherapist, shamanic practitioner, author, and teacher, and I'll be exploring with you ways to connect with spirit animals, ancestors, spirits of nature, how to heal from trauma, and many other topics. So stay tuned. Hello, gang. It's Dr. Stephen Farmer, healing your soul, healing for your soul, actually, which is a little bit of the same. Healing for your soul and healing your soul, and present to you some wonderful guests, some different ideas, ways to think about it. Very tumultuous times here. So, you know, I think we need all the help we can get. So I call on various experts to come and join me as a guest for these podcasts. So I thank you for tuning in. Today, I have a longtime friend and colleague, Gretchen McKay. Go-Go Gretchen Crilly McKay. She'll explain what Go-Go means. She is a shamanic practitioner and a Sangoma. Lives here in Dana Point. I say here because I'm in Dana Point also. She's been practicing shamanism for over 25 years and has studied with master shamans in the U.S. and Africa. In 2001, and you'll hear her story because I want you all to hear this. It's pretty amazing. In 2001, she completed her traditional training and initiation in Swaziland, Africa, and graduated as Sangoma under the mentorship of Zulu shaman P.H. Mochale. Currently, Gretchen has a private shamanic practice where she sees clients and offers ongoing shamanic training for both beginning and advanced students. Go-Go Gretchen uses the African divination system of throwing the bones to diagnose the spiritual issues underlying dis-ease and family patterns, provides shamanic healing through spiritual extraction, soul retrieval, and healing with spiritual light, uses medicinal herbs, flower essences, and aromatherapy to facilitate energetic healing through ceremony and ritual, and teaches workshops for ancestral and personal healing. She also offers two-year programs in advanced shamanic healing and apprenticeships for those called to the path. And you can go to her website, ancestralwisdom.com, ancestralwisdom.com, and find out more about her, what she's up to, and various programs that are going on. Gretchen, finally, we had a little glitches here at the beginning, so I'm glad we got those ironed out. You look great. It's good to see you again, like we were talking.
Good to see you.
It's been a few years since you know, we've had a chance to hang out together. You know, I guess a lot of things are pre-pandemic and post-pandemic at this point. Yeah. You know, it was quite a ride for a couple of years there. But anyway, I want to welcome you to the show and thank you for appearing here as a guest. I'm not even sure where to start, Gretchen. You know, our relationship goes back many years. Almost hesitant to say how long, but, you know,
it's
many years.
It's been a long, and many decades.
I would say so. And I've always had a great deal of respect for you and your work. Okay, let's start with definitions, you know, where they came from.
Yes.
Sangoma, Go-Go Gretchen.
Okay. So the path of the Sangoma is a tradition that comes out of Southern Africa. And the Sangomas are with it's different for each individual tribe. Like there's the Xhosa, the Zulu, and there's other tribes. But basically, it is the shaman or the shamanic practitioner within Africa, within Southern Africa. And I think the most powerful thing about this path is that even though South Africa went through apartheid and so many challenges, the Sangomas remained strong. They've always been the spiritual, emotional healers. And in many places, the Sangomas and local medical people will work together. In fact, I've met nurses who were working in hospitals who were also Sangomas, which I think we're beginning to find here more and more. I train a lot of people who are either therapists or nurses. I've even worked with a couple doctors who are called to the shamanic path, and it just becomes part of the spiritual side of their work. So I think the most important thing about the path of the Sangoma is it is an unbroken line. African healers, traditional healers, see themselves not disconnected from their ancestors. And that's what, you know, my teacher, Baba PH, he had always said when he visited here to the U.S., he said that there are many traditional healers, but he said everyone's lost their ancestors. And that was the missing piece. Yeah. And so when I was called to go study with him, I met him here and then ended up going a year later. I'd already been going to Africa, but I went a year later and started my apprenticeship with him. And it was all about reconnecting me with my biological lineage and then extended beyond that. So their perspective is that there are spiritual ancestors. So those are the ones of the highest vibration. In shamanic work, we'd often call them the upper world teachers. It can include star nations, ascended masters, the angelic realm, and the deities that have been present on our planet, you know, in different traditions. And then we've got the ancestors of blood and bones, our lineage ancestors. And then we've got ancestors of land and place. You know, so those would be the ancestors that maybe haven't incarnated in a human form, but are present as the guardians and caretakers of Mother Earth. And I found that really expanding for me, that perspective, because he said, for instance, when I talked about crossing over, he said, well, was it? He said, St. Peter is waiting right there, you know, waiting to take you across. That was an ancestor. And he also taught me that we can be our own ancestors. I had several experiences of spirit helpers that would come to me and I would say, but I've seen this ancestor in a past life. Can we be our own ancestors? And remember, he just looked at me like, well, of course. You didn't know that? So the African perspective is much broader than ours. And I would often hear him, and during my training, I would hear him and others in a ritual, and they'd be speaking Siswati. So I didn't understand what they were saying, but I'd hear Jesus. Or I'd hear, you know, an archangel, or I'd hear, and I would ask him later, I heard you calling Jesus, but you're not Christian. I mean, you're not following a Christian path. And he would always say, but Jesus is a big go-go, which is like a grandparent, grandfather, grandmother. That's what go-go means. And so the term is really out of respect for carrying the tradition, for being an elder of a tradition.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. That's
so thus go-go. Yeah. Go-go Gretchen. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you earned, in a sense, you earned your place in the world or to do the practices that you've been taught from the ancestors, as well as, how'd you call him? Baba
Michali? Baba, that means father. Yeah, Baba father, Michali. Baba PH, we called him. Baba Michali, yeah.
I think it's so also unique, and I don't know, the listeners can't really see you, but you're white, and yet you were called to Africa.
Yeah,
I think I love that. There's something really special about that you were called to African shamanism, you know, for lack of a better term, but call it African shamanism. Do you find anyone goes kind of puzzled by that, or are they raise an eyebrow or anything like that, or do people just kind of accept it?
So it's such an interesting, you know, it's something I've thought about a lot, because actually now there are a number of Sangoma who have been trained in Africa who live here. There's two women who are African-American who actually live in San Diego County. And they have a retreat center now, and their work is very traditional. The rituals are traditional, the way that they dress, everything, very traditional. Mm. When I left Africa, and PH was sort of telling me how to go about setting up my practice and what I needed to do, I said to him, I said, well, how will this look in America? Because first of all, many of the traditional things, like a house you need to build for your ancestors, a welcoming home by your parents, all of these things. First of all, my parents were gone. Second of all, I lived in a condo. There was no building of a house, and I rented it. So there was nothing in that way. And he said, I have no idea, my dear. This is America. It will look completely different. It will just look like America. Which at the time I had wished he would give me more explicit directions, but I am so grateful to him that he left it open like that, because he understood. His ancestors were telling him, I was carrying this wisdom, but I was carrying it into a white world. And most of my clients are white, although I have had Africans seek me out because they wanted a Sangoma. But even those who have sought me over others, they've chosen me because I am white and they live in this world. Maybe a couple of them, women I remember, were married to white men who were not always accepted by some of the black Sangomas. So it's interesting. I feel like I was called to this, A, to heal my own ancestors.
Right.
And B, to help in a non-threatening way reconnect people to their ancestors. And that's what I see it's been all about. I throw the bones. Okay. Everybody loves the bones. I've never, you know, people get to see all these objects and bones thrown out on a mat. And there's a story, like any divination system. There's a story. And I'm grateful that I have that tool. I love using that tool. I love throwing the bones. But it's played out very different than some of the other Sangomas I know who live here. My purpose is never to scare people. And you're right, I'm white. Now, in all my past life experiences, and I've done several past life explorations, I always end up in this one particular life in Africa, which tells me at this point in time, that life and this life, I've come here this time to complete, finish, resolve, whatever that is. And that's another whole topic, but you know.
Yeah, no, I get it, Gretchen. It's like you provide a bridge. I think that's one way to look at it. Plus, I think in a general way, Gretchen, I think shamanic practice, some of the lines are blurred now. What I mean by that is that, you know, there might be some steadfast fundamentalism about shamanism, you know, and that, you know, here's the rules about being a shaman. You know, you only do it with your own culture. You only do it with your own tradition, et cetera. But I think we're seeing this all over the place where there's some, I'm not sure I'd say crossing of lines so much as the lines are blurred. And certainly I know, as I know you know, is that there are some basic practices in shamanism. You know, Michael Harner would call it core shamanism. You know, in other words, there's similarities, you know, in various cultures about the practices. You know, how do you go into an altered state to do the work, for instance? There's a few different ways. You know, it depends on the how you were trained in the tradition. So that's, I think, a key also in why the other thing you mentioned is being called. You know, I maintain that. I've always maintained that for some time now, that this is not something that's an ambition or I've got a goal or something in those that traditional kind of language. It's more, it's a calling. It's like that niggling that happens, says, okay, or synchronicities that occur that say, okay, time to go to Africa, you know, and you're going, what? Anyway, I don't know if that's the reaction, but
no, that's absolutely, because I began studying shamanism, and I think I met you right in the very beginning of my search. You were ahead of me. You were like in the 2-year program, I think, or the 3-year program at that point with Michael Harder. But I did it because of it just felt right. I was trying to heal myself. I was trying to heal myself, and shamanism was such an incredible tool for that. Getting to know who my guides were, getting to know, you know, what my path was. And then I began, as the more classes I took, I started asking about African shamans, because there were plenty of people going to South America or Mexico or Native Americans. And that wasn't where my interest lay. I mean, starting way before shamanism, I'd been drawn to Africa. Never knew why. I mean, in college.
Interesting. And
I started going to Africa in 1994. And I had gone 3 times, I believe, before I met PH in 1999. And 3 different people called me and said, you need to go see this man. And the first 2 people, I said, yeah, don't have the money. The 3rd person that called me, I went, oh my goodness, she would never tell me to do this unless she really felt it was important. So I went. And I had been searching for some answers to questions about career and path and all sorts of things. He threw those bones for me, and within 30 minutes, he'd answered every question I had. And as we worked, he said, you're being called. You're being called. Mm-hmm. And I was being called to Africa. So he invited me. He invited me to do 2 things. 1, come visit him. 2, to study herbs. And so it was about a year before I went to his homestead in Swaziland. But I studied herbology and aromatherapy. And I remember thinking as I was going through my classes, oh, I know all this stuff. It was one of those, it just felt like, here I am. This is where I belong. And then when I went to, yes, exactly. And then when I went to visit him, which again, I'd been to Africa 3 times already. That was not the scary part, but I did find that I landed at an airport. I'd been traveling for 24 hours. I get to the airport. I've rent a car, and it was the wrong side of the street, the wrong side of the car. And all of a sudden I'm there in Swaziland going, I mean, I had been given landmarks to find him. I finally remember after an hour trying to find his place, pulling over to the side of the road in tears and just saying, help. I was very close. I did find him. And his response to me when I got to his homestead was, how can I help you, my dear? And I'm thinking, oh my God, I just traveled 10,000 miles. Please, don't you know? Anyway, it was the beginning of a really beautiful friendship. And I adored PH. And he worked with me and through the bones and said, yes, you're being called to this path. But what I've always appreciated is I was never told I had to do it. It was as if I had a choice. But honestly, if you're called to the path, you don't really have a choice, because if you ignore it, it just keeps festering. And so I began. I stayed with him and committed to doing the work. And I was actually still teaching. So I went back and finished up my last year of teaching. And 2 days after the school year ended, I flew off to Swaziland and was there for the next 3.5 months and went through traditional.
Discover a new relationship and approach to life through the space between. Join spiritual teacher Brittany Mondito for A Moment of Silence, a weekend workshop May 24th to 26th at Omega Institute's beautiful campus in Rhinebeck, New York. Everything we're searching for lies behind what we're running from, Brittany says. Reconnect with your inner sense of safety, grounding, and centeredness. Learn more today at eomega.org/thrive.
So you went through traditional training with PH. Yeah. And something you've said, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. No, no, got it.
No, the go question ahead. About throwing the bones, I'd like you to tell the listeners, you know, what is throwing the bones? You know, they can conjure up all sorts of images with throwing the bones, but
I know having people say it, scary.
I know.
Yeah. So it is, it's a traditional system, and it is the actual bones in my set are from, I think there's some pig bones and some, I think it's mostly pig. There's a piece of crocodile. There's a couple of things from a chicken. It's very similar to in America, we have hoodoo, which comes from the South. Hoodoo practitioners throw the bones. And I've worked with someone who does that. And it's the same thing. It's bones and objects. And it's more about the story, the way they land the story that they tell. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I have lots of shells. I have pointers. I have some dividers. But the bones themselves are people. And that's probably the most significant in here. And there are bones for the living members in a person's family, as well as in the ancestral realm.
Okay. So you mean physically bones, actual bones?
Yes.
In addition to other objects that will tell the story around the various people that are represented by the bones. Is that correct?
Yep, that's exactly right. And they are not human bones. I've been asked that before. There's no human bones in them.
Oh, good. Okay. Did everybody hear that? It's not human bones. Okay.
No.
Well, you mentioned, human. I think, a couple. You said chicken bones, for instance, or something.
Yes.
But, having experienced that, Gretchen, you threw the bones for me a couple of times. I thought it was a really cool and very accurate way. And a very, it seems to also require a collaborative process intuitively, as well as what's presented to you physically by the configuration of the bones and the other objects. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There is definitely mediumship that's involved. And there is a friend of mine who's, he's actually South African and was trained by my teacher and another teacher who he and I talked one time, and he said, he's actually a doctor, and he throws the bones before he does a surgery to see if there's anything that he, I love this, and to see if there's anything that he didn't notice. And there have been a couple of times where something is, he's pointed to look someplace and it's changed the surgery. I find that fascinating. But he always says to me that, he said, I'm not, how does he put it? He said, I'm not clairvoyant like you. And I see, I don't see that I'm clairvoyant, but I'm clairaudient and I'm clairsentient. Mm. So I feel things and I do hear, you know, I hear. And it, so it is a form of mediumship. And when I throw the bones, I look at the configuration and then I wait to get some extra messages, you know, that point you in the direction. I love the process, and it never turns out exactly the same twice.
Well, again, I use the term collaborative. You know, it seems like there is this collaboration that can be explained in a few different ways, but basically that intuitive process where you're engaging, you know, with the configuration as it's shown up, and then you're receiving messages. You said largely auditory or clairaudient and clairsentient, which means sensations in the body, correct? And I think that's important too. I was just talking to somebody earlier today about that is, and I suggested, it was a radio show, and I suggested to the listeners there, you know, is learn what your, you know, what's your main one, you know, mine I know is hearing, auditory, and same as you, clairsentient, that's why we get along so well, but also visually, you know, I, over the years, it's, I've been able to see things also, but that I don't rely on it as much.
Right.
You know, I really rely much more on that internal voice that goes on, or hearing something out here, you know, that connects with whatever I'm focusing on. And also the sensations, you know, in the body. I think I'm beginning to believe maybe that's where it all starts anyway, in the body. We get sensations, and then it, I don't know this, you know, but it's just something that's a fresh thought that came up about a week ago. Like,
you know, if you think about it, what we are learning, and I know your background is in trauma and therapy. I mean, there's, I have friends who are shamanic practitioners and trauma therapists who are using somatic experience now, which is all about releasing from the body these held woundings, these held traumas. So I absolutely agree with you. Our body, if we can, if we learn to listen to it, gives us a lot of information.
Yeah, and you know, and I certified in somatic experiencing, so I
preaching
to the choir here. It's another tool. That's what I would say.
And absolutely.
I remember reading something years ago, and it was a quote from Stanley Krippner, who wrote a lot about what we might call New Age. I don't like that term, but he said that there are. He was explaining what shamanism is and shamanic practices need. And he said, there are some practices that are shamanistic. And I like that term because that it may not be like, you know, pure shamanism or coming from a particular tradition. Specifically, what I recall he said was like Reiki. You know, you don't think of Reiki as shamanism, but it has a shamanistic flavor to it.
It does.
You know, working with energy, you know, doing hands-on healing, you know, those are the kind of things that he called shamanistic. And at the same time, when you engage with some tradition, whatever it may be, or some training, you find out there's, it's a whole different world. What I like about it, Gretchen, is that it reconnects us certainly with the ancestors. And in the paradigm that I've worked with is that the ancestry goes way, way back. You know, we're talking you know, hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, of years.
Yes, yes, to the beginning.
We really reach back, to the beginning, you know, and the original ancestors. Yeah. So I like that the African shamanism is I'm not sure how to say it, but that's so much an aspect or a part of African shamanism. Yeah.
Well, and even, you know, when we look at it, ritual is somatic. It releases things. And I think, I feel like, and this is just some of the stuff I'm experiencing now, and because we continue to shift, we continue, you know, our vibration continues to raise. And what I'm seeing more and more is that it is all about energy, whether it's shamanistic or, you know, a lot of my students that are working in my advanced class all have been doing Reiki or one of these other modalities. And all that happens is they get some new tools and the ancestors just use them all together. I always say nothing is wasted. It's like nothing is an accident. And for me anyway, it really increases the magic of this path. Expect the unexpected. Like you're saying, you know, nature is the place that I am filled up, that I am renewed, and that I'm inspired.
Oh, so many. Yeah. So many people are feeling that way.
Yes. It's the place that I can go, especially with us living right by the ocean, and the ocean is my place. You know, I can be there and listen to the waves and see the wildlife and just feel refreshed and renewed. And I don't need to understand it all, but there's a vibration that happens between myself and this sacred place that I love.
I understand. Yeah. I think the other thing I think of is, gosh, go, everybody get outside, go in the backyard.
Yes.
You know, go to the park, you know,
find a tree.
You don't have to walk that far. Yeah. Find a tree, you know, just to be able to relate, put your backbone up against a tree and allow the tree. I often say like, breathe with the tree.
Yes.
You know, just breathe with the tree. And people go, what? Yeah. Just try it.
Try
you know, just try it. You know, it sounds crazy, but try it. See what happens.
Yeah.
So well, it is.
Go ahead. I was just going to say
that's part of shamanism. Is part of the revival and the remembrance of our relationship with the natural world, which I maintain. You know, we're a largely forgetful species. You know, for the most part, especially Western. I think the Western civilization has really lost touch, you know, with that deeper memory. Anyway, I sort of interrupted you, but what were you going to say?
I was just going to say that another part for me that's really encouraging is, you know, we have quantum science and quantum scientists, and now I can't remember the name of the woman who did the research about redwoods up in, I believe it was Canada, but she's one of the first ones that started looking at the mitochondria and the way all these trees are connected. And so it's kind of like Avatar, the first Avatar. It's like, it's not a far stretch. Those trees are talking, they're breathing, they're communicating. And they have a lot to teach us. It's just that they have a different language. And we have to stop long enough, like you're saying, back up to a tree, just clear your mind, be with the tree, breathe with the tree. It has so much to teach us, even if what it's teaching us is to relax.
Yeah, at minimum, yes.
Yeah.
You mean they don't speak English? How do I understand what they're trying to communicate?
Exactly.
You know, and again, sensory. At the minimum, it's sensory, but then I think it can translate them to auditory or clairaudient, as well as cognitive, you know,
the
intuition, connecting with the intuition in some way. My goodness, Gretchen. And also a little bit about, before we bring this to a close, but I want to hear some things about your trainings, because you're training quite a few people, you know, both beginning and advanced programs.
You know, as you mentioned, the pandemic changed a lot. I used to offer a lot of classes in person, and I was always appreciative of coming up with new ideas. And after the pandemic, it's taken a long time for people to get back to being comfortable in person. In person is still my favorite thing.
Yep.
But I do offer the fourth Saturday of every month, I offer a Zoom shamanic journeying circle. And you do need to know how to journey, but we just come together. There's been this beautiful group that's grown over the last couple of years. And probably like in some of your things, I mean, they come from all over the world. So that's the gift about being able to do something like that. I do a lot of work one-on-one with people who are really preparing to deepen their shamanic path. So I might work for, I do a chakra program, which is for 8 months. And we explore one chakra each month. We use journeying, we use art, we use ritual. And really it's to clear everything out. I love that program because I love working with someone over a period of time. My advanced program is for people who are called. This work really calls to them. And there we work, we use very traditional practices like learning extraction and soul retrieval and healing with light and death, dying and beyond. We explore all of those things, but my recognition a number of years ago was that it's really more about someone having ongoing community and guidance to go really deep. And I always tell them, no one, you won't be the same person when you leave this. It's, you have long-term classes and it's profound what they learn about themselves and the world. Yeah. And I think I love that the most because I love to see this unfolding of their soul's journey. And it's a beginning. You know, sometimes they like to think, this used to happen more. Someone would think they could hang up a shingle at the end of it and say, I'm a shaman. And we both know, we give our students those lectures of, you are not becoming a shaman. You're a shamanic practitioner.
Right.
And there is no graduation certification for it. You're just, you know, this is your path. This is a journey. I really love that. I'm actually in process working with a friend of mine who worked for years with Sabanfu Somme, who was from Burkina Faso. And Sabanfu and her, she called him her husband, her once upon a time husband, a husband, Maladoma. So may they've both crossed over now, but she shared the grief ritual from the Dagara perspective and other traditions. And so Susan and I have been talking about trying to bring together a grief ritual. The challenge is Americans really need grief rituals. We don't honor grief in our culture. However, it's a lot to carry, and we're not from the Dagara tribe. We're still in the process of sort of exploring what that would look like. We started to offer it, and then it was clear we weren't supposed to yet. So that's what I'm hoping. That's what it feels like is coming up new for me that's next.
I'm glad to hear that because I think that, like you said, that we typically, Americans, we don't deal with the grief very well. You know, we can do rituals, et cetera, around death and dying, you know, when someone has passed and everything, but to make room for it. Who was it? Somebody, a client I talked to earlier was talking about that they've had some couple of tragic deaths, and they were both talking, the mom and also the sister were talking about caving up. They're going to cave up.
Oh,
isn't that an interesting term? And the purpose of the cave up is to make some space, you know, and to
that's
make some
beautiful
some space, simply to allow the grief to process. I went, how refreshing that is.
That's
so it's
beautiful.
Okay, within 3 days, that's enough. Let's go. I'm going to go. I got to get to work.
No.
You know, instead of giving it time. So
it's a
good
process
for you. I trust that that will come together with you and Susan doing that.
Yeah.
Again, before we end, I want to say to contact Gretchen, to contact you, ancestralwisdom.com. You have quite a few different offerings, you know, from, you know, what I've seen. Our trainings, our opportunities, et cetera. Join the once a month circle. You know, if you have some journeying experience, it sounds like a great opportunity that you've offered. So I, for one, first off, good to see you again. It's been a while.
Good to see you. Yeah.
and hear from you also about updating on what your work is about. And I do want to encourage people to look you up. You know, find out more.
Thank you.
You know, go to her website, Ancestral Wisdom. And again, we've known each other for, like you said,
decades. That's scary.
Well, we both started on the path very close to the same time, you know, just slightly different paths. But I certainly appreciate it, my friend. And, you know, somewhere down the road, I'd love to have you back, you know, and we can talk some more and go into greater depth about some of these things. So
thank you,
you know, so much, Gretchen. And I love you.
Thank you, Stephen.
I respect you and appreciate your service. So God bless.
God bless. The feeling is mutual.
You can also find lots of material on that website, drstephenfarmer.com. So please feel free to explore. Please also know that by sending a question, you're giving me permission to possibly use it in a future podcast so others may benefit from it. And to close, I'd leave you with the four most important words to take with you. Gratitude, love, compassion, and forgiveness.
I'm Rachel Corpus, an angel communicator, psychic medium, and host of the Angel Talk podcast. This show is meant to help you remember who you are, a limitless being with shoes and socks on. And along the way, we'll connect to people on the other side and experts in the field like authors, healers, animal communicators, and more. Listen to all my shows at Mind, Body, Spirit FM or wherever you get your podcasts.